Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd here live from the Kintec Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at DunbarLumber.com. Drancer, as mentioned, down in practice. You heard from him briefly on the show with a quick report from practice in Nashville. He'll join the show in the next hour. Right now, however, very pleased to be joined from right here on Sportsnet 650, here among Canucks Central, and of course, the post-game show as well. He is Satyar Shah. Sat, thanks for doing this, man. How are you?
What's happening, man? I'm good. Good. Don't mind me. I'm still vibing to the your bumper music coming back in. Very summery.
Yeah.
Feeling good, man.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We feel like put my shades on while doing this hit.
We got strong bumper music, I got to say. Yeah. I'm enjoying it. You know what I mean? And much like JT Miller at practice today, sometimes you got to keep the mood light, right? Keep things just kind of vibing like that.
Exactly. Listen, we don't want to make that trip. You have to make the best of it. And it looks like JT is right now, right?
But yeah.
Lighten the mood, wear an ugly whatever. What is that? Like, is that like a button-up shirt he's wearing?
I think it's like a shirt? You know what it reminds me of? Something that like The Rock would have worn on like Monday Night Raw in the 90s. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. like a fancy like silk dress shirt. That's what it looks like to me.
That is what it looks like. Well, hopefully it pays off.
But like I made the point, you know, in the first segment, you know, we always talk about JT Miller being like the emotional barometer of the team. And we always think about that, like him being so passionate and, you know, wearing his emotions on his sleeve and dragging the team into the fight. And I think when you think of like great leaders in NHL history, that's kind of the vision that comes to mind. But this kind of stuff can be really important as well, right? Like sometimes you need to go the opposite way. It can't always be about, you know, trying to ramp emotions up to 100. Sometimes you need to lighten the mood a little bit.
Absolutely. And I mean, and I think that's kind of something JT's been doing all season and pretty much throughout his tenure. I know the coach talks about wanting to see more of those sort of things. And especially you saw it too, what was it, the game Connor Garland played his 400th game.
Yeah.
And he got his 20th goal and everything. And he had the T-shirts wearing, you know, Connor Garland's 400th game stuff. And that lightened the mood. And that was when the team was struggling a bit. They lost a couple of games or trying to win the division late in the season. And apparently that was really good to lighten the mood. And they go on to finish things off and finish first in the division. So that was something that obviously helped him out in a moment of perhaps a little bit of distress late in the season. And hopefully, not to say the Canucks are in distress, they still have a 3-2 series lead, but when you get to game 6 and 7, it's kind of like anything can happen territory. You know how we talk about in hockey, right? It's like anything can happen in a single game, but hockey is so random. Anything can happen in 2 games, you know? So if you get to game 6, you know, and then you get to game 7, it can be really difficult for you mentally to feel like you can pull this off. So I think it's a right move from him and something this team needs more of in terms of having guys in the locker room that can lighten the mood and talk a little bit.
Well, I even think about that, you know, going back to when Rick Tocchet first got here, right? Like, hey, this is a quiet group. And I don't think he doesn't just mean, you know, talking about, like, you know, talking on the ice about positioning or, you know, holding each other accountable. You talk to any player, right? And they'll say, like, one of the most important things in the room, any ex-player, is just that camaraderie, those jokes, those chirps, right? And I think that's part of what JT Miller is providing here. And, you know, to your point about, okay, let's step back here. It's not as if the team is in distress. They're still in the favorable position in this series with the 3-2 lead. Do you think Tocchet's sending a similar message there by not making any lineup changes at practice today?
I think he's been trying to show a lot of calm, right, throughout this entire thing. And one of the things he's spoken about throughout the season, and because he's been prodded sometimes, right, about like why isn't he being more demonstrative towards the officials, for instance? Mm. Why is he not getting more angry at times for things that happen? And his thing has been, well, if I want the guys to be able to be cool under pressure and not crack, they can't turn around and look at their head coach losing his mind every 10 minutes something happens, right? So I think he's really trying to live by that. It's like, if I'm asking you guys to be cool under pressure and meet pressure with pressure, I'm not going to be the one that's going to lose my cool and get all worried about things. I wonder if that's part of the deal here too. But the other thing I wonder about is it a bit of a smokescreen? Because do you want to tip your hand at all ahead of a pivotal game 6 if you are making lineup decisions?
Yeah, I think that's a fair question, right? And I am trying to put that caveat on it, right? That, hey, like, it's not game day, so we could still theoretically see something different. But it would surprise me, given how adamant he's been, that the team just needs to start executing better, right? Like, that's been his message since the beginning of the series, is he's said, you know, yeah, there's maybe some tweaks we can make, and hey, they're fronting, so here's some things we got to do differently. But always, he's also said, you know, a lot of it just comes down to execution, bearing down on our shots, playing to our staples. And I think that's the message he's sending. Like, I think it's partly about sending that calm message too, but it's also in some ways kind of prodding the players, like, hey, you can do more. Don't look to me to fix it. You guys can fix it with these lines still.
Yeah, there's no magic bullet solution.
Yeah.
The solution is you guys just have to win your battles more. And honestly, I mean, for the most part in Game 5, outside of the second period, they did a really good job of cutting through the press that Nashville has had, the pressure that they put on the team, and they did a good job getting through it, creating some looks, creating some chances. Of course, you want the quality to still be a bit greater. You want to still be able to obviously finish off your opportunities. But in terms of fighting through pressure and making the types of decisions you need to make to not just get rid of the puck or get kind of caught like you're a deer in headlights, they played through that. So I think that was kind of the template. I'm sure he's showing the tape from that first period especially and saying, this is all you guys need to do to beat this pressure, right? And especially along the boards, too. You saw how much more engaged guys like Elias Höglander were.
I mean, yes.
The first shift, he's out there hitting guys. Elias Pettersson on the first shift knocks the puck off Alexander Carrier after he was softened up by a big hit from Elias Höglander, led to a scoring chance. And you saw a lot of that. Like, even from that Höglander-Pettersson line, I know the coach said they were fine, and they can obviously be a lot better, but it was the best game they've had in the series because they're winning battles, they're getting inside, they're cycling the puck around, creating scoring chances. So if you're the coach, I think you're showing a lot of those clips and saying, this is what I'm asking of you. I'm not asking, we don't need to do anything spectacular here. We just need to execute our game plan.
Yeah, and I think it's really telling that the first period against Nashville in Game 5 was probably their best period of the series, and it was probably also the one that's closest to what you would call Canucks hockey. It was the closest to their identity that they established in the regular season. We just haven't seen it for like multiple periods in a row from the Canucks too often in this series, and I think that's what Tockett's trying to get to is, we played like this all year. The way we played all year will work if we can do it consistently against the Preds.
And honestly, I think part of coaching in a playoff series, and you saw the flip side of it with the Winnipeg Jets, for instance, right? Like, and listen, I don't know if they were trying to make adjustments or not, but one thing that happened was the players clearly lost faith in what they needed to do to work. They didn't believe what they were doing was going to work to win the series. Now, maybe they thought they were overmatched. They looked like the team that did not believe they could beat Colorado, especially after the first couple of games. So I think what you're trying to do as a coach, too, is like, let the guys still believe that what we've done all yet here is going to help us. Even in moments of distress, even in moments of it looks like things are turning against us, as long as we focus and do the things we need to do, we are going to be fine. And that's your biggest fear, I think, as a head coach, too, is you don't want to change things too much, and you don't want guys to lose faith in your process that got you to this point all season.
All right, so the other big question, we won't get an answer to it today. You know, Tockett said he was still thinking it over yesterday when he talked briefly to the media, of course, but it's going to be who starts in net in Game 6. Now, there's been the slight minor injury with Casey DeSmith, although he was healthy enough to back up in Game 5 for Archer Shelovs. Shelovs played really well, I thought, in that game, despite ending up picking up the loss. So let's just say, theoretically, before we get into like who's going to start in Game 6, if both guys are perfectly healthy, how close do you think the Canucks' kind of internal evaluation of the two goalies is? Right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, how much daylight is there between who they think is better between Shelovs and Casey DeSmith?
I think the best way to illuminate this is to create a score out of 100, right? Let's say, for argument's sake, that you give Casey DeSmith a 75.
Yeah.
Is Shelovs anywhere from 73 to 76, kind of, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's, I think that's how you would view it, right? Like, if he's above DeSmith, it's 1 or 2 points above DeSmith. If he's below DeSmith, it's 1 or 2 points below DeSmith, right? And I thought, you know, the best descriptor I got about this whole situation and who to go with goaltending-wise was Kevin Woodley with us yesterday, and he made a great point. I mean, this is why we need the goalie experts, really, to illuminate what goalies are doing well or not doing well. And despite the fact he was tremendous in Game 5, of course, only allowed 2 goals, made a number of solid saves, the one problem, of course, was that the way that Woodley saw it, there were a lot of screenshots where he didn't, whether he worked hard enough or was able to track the puck or not, he didn't see the puck, and the puck ends up missing the net, but he has no idea where it is. So if you're Nashville, for instance, and you notice that as well, what are you looking to exploit now in Game 6?
Yep.
Where you saw a couple of things that you may want to exploit a little bit. He was really good, but how do you look for that kind of edge? Casey DeSmith has issues with his game, his rebound control being one of them. But one thing he does really well is make the initial save, right? Like, he'll make the initial save, he'll kick out a pretty juicy rebound from time to time. But guys, he'll make the initial save more often than not, which in and of itself is pretty important, especially when you have a defense as big as the Canucks defense that clears out so well. They've had their centers drop down, clear pucks out, box out. So they've done a lot of those good things. So they've mitigated some of the flaws into Smith's game. So if you have any concerns as a coaching staff or goalie, you know, department, that there are areas of Shilov's game they may look to exploit, then that kind of change up and going with the, you know, change up and going with DeSmith in game six, which kind of takes away some of their game planning. How much of an edge is that? Is it a 1% edge? And if anything, does it make it harder for that team now to find flaws in a goalie that they haven't seen in a few days?
Yeah, it's a fascinating decision because I think you're right. I think like anyone who's saying there's this massive gulf between the two, I mean, look, I'm not a goalie expert, so I could be way off, but I think the way you put it there is, okay, it's like 1 or 2 points, percentage points, either way between these two goalies. And, you know, it's a really good point about Nashville's game plan, but also just how the Canucks are going to play in front of the goalie, right? I thought in game three, which Casey DeSmith won in Nashville, they played that game like perfectly tailored for Casey DeSmith, right? He could see the first shot, and they kind of, it almost looked like, okay, they knew he's going to kick out some of those rebounds, but as you said, they were ready, they were in position to box out and take care of that, and that was just I think that was their best defensive game of the series so far, despite getting significantly outshot. Like, so many of those were low danger shots that Casey DeSmith could handle, and I do wonder if maybe they figure, you know, hey, if we can play that type of game again for Casey DeSmith, let's put him back in for game six here.
Yeah, and that's kind of, if I had to guess, and none of us really have the information right now because the Canucks have been really good at keeping it quiet, my guess would be Casey DeSmith, and just kind of maybe some of the tea leaves or whatever, some of the things you're kind of hearing, it makes me believe they would go to Casey DeSmith game six. Now, we'll obviously find out tomorrow, but I'm not against it. And I like Shilov's. Like, my thought about all this was, okay, go back to Shilov's game six. But once you look into it a bit more, talk to some goalie guys a bit more, and they really illuminate what's going on, the decision, you know, like I said on the show yesterday, Jamie, I'm at a point now with the goalie department and the decisions they've made, I'm not going to really doubt too much.
Seriously,
what they're doing.
Yeah.
Like, they clearly know what they're doing. And they have far more information on these things than we do. Now, you can say the same thing when it comes to forwards and defensemen, of course, but I think the goalie position in and of itself is so much more advanced and intricate that even NHL head coaches will defer to the goalie department. They'll be like, hey, listen, don't ask me, man. I just rely on my goalie guy. That's generally how most teams go about it. So I think us as well, if we sit here and say Ian Clark is the top goalie, one of the top goalie coaches, we all have implicit trust in how he goes about things. Look at the guys he's developed. Look at the work that he's done. If that's the case, then should we really question too many of their decisions in terms of who they go with here in game six?
And I think the other takeaway for me is, you know, they can win with either guy. They literally have already won with both guys in net in this series, right? So who knows? We'll see what the decision is and how it works out. But, like, they have every chance to win this series, to finish off this series, no matter who is in net for game six. A couple other things I wanted to get into. So Quinn Hughes in this series, of course, game four down in Nashville, you know, we see the double hit, and of course he's taken so many hits, and there starts to be this speculation, is he dealing with something, you know, how close to 100% is he? His ice time is significantly reduced in the first 40 minutes, especially in that game, and you know, I thought he played really poorly in the first 40 minutes, like bobbling the puck, some just uncharacteristic play. Then in game five, I thought he was excellent. I thought he played really, really well. Looked much more like, you know, kind of classic Quinn Hughes, like we got used to seeing. What do you think is going on with Quinn Hughes, if anything? And as we talk about, okay, how do the Canucks generate more offense? How do they get more shots? Could part of the answer from Tocchet be increasing Quinn Hughes' ice time in the final game or two of this series?
Yeah, and that's something that I think to really keep an eye on here too, right, is do they just go all in on Quinn Hughes? I wonder the biggest two things. Clearly, there seems to be something that's bothering him. There's been various reports that perhaps an injury, upper body, shoulder or not, like something could be going on. But I think the biggest one is the adjustments towards being targeted so much in the playoffs. And I know he was targeted a bit against the Blues in that in the bubble playoffs, and same thing against Vegas. But this is a different animal. Like, the intensity is completely at a higher level, right? And then the physicality at times is even a lot higher. And I think that's something that he has to adjust towards. And I think the coach made a good point about, yes, you know, we need to do better on our forecheck and staying in the offensive zone, and that's going to alleviate some of the pressure we're feeling and players being under duress. But he can also make better decisions when he has the puck to avoid getting hit as much. And it's almost, you're so skilled to a fault sometimes where you feel like you can hold on to the puck to the last minute, absorb a hit, and then make a play, but they really add up over the course of a playoff series. And is it really worth it for you to make that play you're looking to make to absorb that extra hit all the time? So there are times where I think he can do better just advancing the puck, not holding on to it as much, and get himself out of positions where he's going to get hit as much, and that's just experience of playing playoff hockey. But the other thing is there seems to be something holding him back. Now, most players, of course, are going through something to some degree, but to answer the question, those are the two things I think of as to why we haven't seen Quinn Hughes at his peak consistently. We saw it, you're right, in Game 5. We've seen it in spurts, but not consistently through five games.
And it's such a huge key. I mean, we all know. Like, for me, I know JT Miller was voted MVP by the fans, but for me, Quinn Hughes, clearly the MVP of this team. And that, you know, that was my big concern when it looked like they were going to lose Game 4 was like, uh-oh, if this is the Quinn Hughes they're getting for the rest of the series, this could get dicey. But now, I kind of think the flip side coming out of Game 5, like if he can play two more games like that, they're probably going to win one of them because, you know, he's that good and he's that important to the team. Now, his defense partner has come under, I think, a fair bit of scrutiny during these playoffs. Like, is it fair to kind of put Filip Hronek under the microscope at this point? You know, the thing that really strikes me is it's not just the lack of production. I know people talk about, oh, missing the net on slap passes and all that. But I think the thing that's most concerning for me is that Rick Tocchet clearly prefers other defensemen to play in this series, right? Like, we've seen Nikita Zadorov's ice time spike. You know, Zadorov was even out there with the empty net in Game 4 in Nashville, and that concerns me a little bit if there has been something of a drop of trust in Hronek from the coaching staff.
Yeah, and I mean, so you're right. Like, he's a second behind Zadorov in ice time, right? And he's only like 30 seconds above Tyler Myers. But this is a player who was playing 23 minutes a game during the regular season, right? Now, I wonder if some of that does coincide with Quinn and his deployment in a couple of games where that wasn't quite as high as it needed to be. To be honest, I think defensively, like, he's had a couple moments where he's made mistakes. I mean, honestly, I thought the biggest mistake he made was the time he tripped and it led to a goal. I forget what. I think it was in game four. Like, he trips at the blue line. And it leads to the goal going the other way. I mean, it's the 4-on-4, right? I think it's the Forsberg goal where it goes off his skate. He trips at the blue line. And those things kind of happen. But I haven't seen too many defensive lapses from him. I know he's a dash three. My biggest concern with his game has been offensively. And I know what he's trying to do with that diagonal, you know, slap pass, but he's shooting it way too hard and he's going to way too often, you know, and I think there are things about his game, and this is the first time he's playing in the playoffs too in a real meaningful run, right? So this is also a player who's learning for the first time how to adjust and what to do, and he's a guy that I want to see just be a lot more direct with how he plays, you know, and there are times he holds on to it a bit too long, and more than anything else, use that shot and get it on net, create a rebound, and into a fault, you know, he'll go with that diagonal pass, but then you shoot it so hard, it's a missile. The guy can't tip it, you know, and it's like, sure, you're going with the right play, but if you're going to, you know, do a slap pass that's almost 90 miles an hour, good luck getting somebody to tip it on the other end, right? And I think that's kind of something he has to do a lot better job of. But overall, I haven't been too concerned with his defensive play. It's been more that lack of offensive push. And if we're being honest about it, that offensive push has really dried up in the second half of the season too, for him. So this is kind of a continuation of him not being as prolific and productive as he was for the first 40 games this year.
And that's kind of what you're wanting to get from him, right? And you know, even like your point about his ice time going down because Quinn Hughes's deployment is going down, I think that's a good one, but that also concerns me a little bit, right? Like, if you're going to be as we start to look ahead to the summer, and if you're going to give him a big long-term contract, if you're going to invest in him as kind of a high-end number two, you want him to be able to be effective even without Quinn Hughes, right? Like, ideally, you could have a player, you know, a number two defenseman that, okay, if Quinn Hughes is hurt and we have to reduce his ice time, we can still lean on that number two. And I don't know if the coaching staff views Filip Hronek that way right now.
Yeah, I like Filip Hronek a lot, and I think he's probably number three. Not a true number two, a number three, right? Like on a really good team. But also, I think part of it could also be the other two pairs have looked really good, right?
That's
like
true.
Soucy and Myers have looked fantastic. Cole and Zadorov had some really good chemistry as well. So I wonder if with the way those four guys have looked and also the size and physicality those four players have, it's like anytime those four guys are out there or those other two pairs are out there, almost nothing happens in front of their own goal, right? They've been fantastic in cutting plays off. They're killed the cycle. So good at being physical and clearing pucks out as well. One of the few mistakes they made was Zadorov on the Yossi goal, the one where they could have challenged for goalie interference, where he vacates space and allows Josi all the space to come in. That's one of the few times those two pairs have made like a pretty bad defensive mistake, which has led to a goal and a chance against. So part of it can also be you're feeling so confident and comfortable in those other four guys that you're not going to squeeze an extra shift or two up for these other players if they're not going the way they need to be going.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair point. I mean, one of the things that stood out is the Canucks don't have a defensive pair that they need to hide in this series. Like, so often in the playoffs, you know, you see teams really have to be careful with their third pairing minutes and, you know, really pick the spots to get them out there. And, you know, Rick Tocchet and Adam Foote, they have the luxury of not needing to worry about that because they have so much trust in, as you said, Cole Zadorov and Susie Myers as well. Hey, Sat, really appreciate the time, man. I know how busy you are right now. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, anytime, man. Always a lot of fun.
All right, that is Satyar Shah from Canucks Central here on Sportsnet 650. And, of course, also you hear him on the pregame show for our games and the postgame show for our Canucks broadcast. Kind enough to spend a little bit of time reacting to some of the things we've seen at Canucks practice today and also looking ahead to Game 6. And interesting to hear from Sat, the kind of reading the tea leaves. He wouldn't be surprised to see Casey DeSmith back in net for Game 6. And, of course, I don't think we'll hear probably even tomorrow. We might not really know until warm-up. For the Canucks, who's going to be starting in net. We'll see if they even do a full game day skate. It might just be an optional tomorrow. So Rick Tocchet's obviously going to be really careful about how he handles the information on this one. But I do think there's a certain logic. I mean, there's a reason why teams have started rotating goalies more and more, right? Even in the regular season, you get the fresher guy in, keep the other team on their toes. I can understand the logic there. And again, it comes down for me to the fact that these are both pretty good goalies, or at least good enough to win with. Again, literally, they've both won a game in this series so far. If the Canucks play defensively how they're able to, certainly how they did in Game 3 in Nashville in front of Casey DeSmith, then they can absolutely close this one out in Nashville tomorrow night with either guy in net. So it really comes down to what Ian Clark has to say about it, you know, maybe a little bit of gamesmanship, keeping Nashville on their toes, not letting them settle into playing against one specific goalie for a stretch of games. If that's just tilts the dial enough to Casey DeSmith, then sure, why not go back to Casey DeSmith in Game 6? And I think the other thing is the way this has developed, they're both options and they will both be options for Game 7 if it gets to that. I'm not trying to get ahead of ourselves here, but even if you go to Casey DeSmith in Game 6 and it doesn't work out, you can still go back to Archer Schielhaus for Game 7. You still have options. Both goalies are completely in play here. Both goalies have won you games, have looked good. You can go to either one. You can still like your chances to be able to get a win, that one more win they need in this series. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Some good text coming in. I'll dive into the inbox in the next segment. We'll see when Canucks practice wraps up here. Drancer will join the show after that, after he's done all the availabilities and everything. Hopefully we have a chance to play some Rick Tocchet audio at some point as well. But before that, we'll read your text. I'll do the Abbey report in the next segment as well. More Canucks talk coming up here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd holding down the fort until Drancer is ready to join. Hopefully this segment, maybe next segment. We'll see. Live radio. We'll make it happen when it does happen. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. I am live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And we're starting to get some quotes rolling in after Canucks practice. And of course, I'm not joking here. The big story ahead of game six from Canucks practice in Nashville. JT Miller wearing Archer Shelov's pink/salmon paisley dress shirt. Those are Dan Murphy's words. On ice at practice, and the quotes in reaction to that are starting to roll in. First of all, via Drancer, Archer Shelov suggested that Miller's practice jersey on Thursday was, quote, nice. Jokes that his dress shirt as a practice jersey represents an improvement. I love this one from Nikita Zadorov via Dan Murphy. He says, Zadorov on Shelov's shirt selection. I mean, he has to know better. He's not going to a nightclub in Riga. Nikita Zadorov, he's laid some vicious hits in this series. That might be number one. From Nikita Zadorov, he's not going to a nightclub in Riga on Artur Shelov's, of course, the Latvian young goaltender for the Vancouver Canucks. Absolutely savage from Nikita Zadorov. And yeah, more evidence of keeping the mood light down in Nashville for the Vancouver Canucks. It makes me curious. I've never been to Riga, never been to Latvia, never been to a nightclub in Riga, and now I'm curious about what the dress code is like, what the sense of fashion in a Riga nightclub is like after that quote from Nikita Zadorov. All right, we'll see if we get any more quotes from Canucks practice, any audio we can pass along, or anything from Rick Tocchet. The other note from Drancer was the Canucks putting in some extra work on power play entries at practice on Thursday. He also says tons of power play work at Canucks practice, and while it doesn't look exceptionally sharp, Rick Tocchet is full of encouragement. Vancouver bench boss now having an extended chat with Elias Pettersson as practice concludes. So Tocchet putting in some FaceTime with Elias Pettersson, who of course has been subject of so much discussion so far through the first five games of this series, understandably so. The power play work is interesting, not surprising. That was probably the most disappointing aspect of game five from my perspective, was just the fact that not only did the power play not convert, I mean, it was just dismal. It was really, really bad. And the Canucks had the special teams advantage in this series. Of course, the power play wins them game three on the road in Nashville. Their penalty kill had been fantastic until it gives up the goal in game five, and that kind of got flipped on its head. Now, their penalty kill still had some really good moments earlier in the game, but the fact that Nashville's penalty kill turned it up, the Canucks couldn't keep any momentum going on the power play, and again, it wasn't even like they weren't even generating. They weren't putting Nashville under pressure. They weren't making UC Saros work. They couldn't even really get set up. So not surprising to see that Rick Tocchet's putting them through their paces on the power play and especially on the entries. We talk so much about how they get set up once they're in the zone, but yeah, the problem in game five was they couldn't even gain the zone to get set up and to make it count. So that's going to be a key for this one. Looking ahead to game six, can the Canucks restore that special teams advantage that they had earlier in the series? I like their penalty kill to keep cooking. You know, even that power play goal they give up in game five didn't, you know, it wasn't as if they were getting sliced and diced by the Nashville power play before that. It was kind of an odd one off the rush, as we all know, a little controversial as well. So I like the penalty kill to keep going, to keep doing what it's been doing against the Nashville power play. But now I think the power play needs to step up and convert, not just, you know, take steps in the right direction, not just generate pressure, but convert, put some goals on the board in this one if the Canucks are to seal this series in game six down in Nashville. Lots of texts coming in here. Steve Dunbar, Lumber text message inbox. And, you know, Sat and I were talking in the previous segment about the lack of lineup changes from Rick Tocchet that we saw at practice today. Now, as Sat said, you could always see a curveball tomorrow, right? Like, do you really want to tip your hand to Nashville if you are going to make some lineup changes? So we could still easily see something different at tomorrow's game. We have seen that on a couple of occasions from Rick Tocchet this year. Practice one way and then on game day send something different out. But I also think there's a lot of understandable reasons why he has decided not to make changes. And this text came in unsigned. How much of this is just Tockett not having very many options? No matter what, he's going to have some weak spots in his top nine. I think that's a huge part of this, quite frankly. They're already playing Pius Suter and Ilya Mikheyev in the top six. Now, you could say Mikheyev's really in the bottom six because that's functionally how they've used Elias Pettersson in this series, is as a third-line center. But still, you're trying to have three scoring lines. That's the hope. And you've got some guys who do not profile as, you know, scoring line players, really, in those spots. But who are you putting in that does? You know, I've seen a lot of people suggest, okay, move Hoglander up to play with Pius Suter, or to play in Pius Suter's spot. Hoglander, I thought, had a really strong performance. Well, I shouldn't say really strong, but a stronger performance in Game 5. But I also don't think there's the trust from Rick Tockett to play Hoglander in the type of situations that JT Miller's line plays in, especially on the road where you can't control the matchups. You know, Miller is probably going to find himself out there against the Ryan O'Reilly line at certain points. You have to be prepared for that. Pius Suter, I think, has the trust. Not that he's a perfect defensive player. I don't know if Nils Hoglander does. So I think that's a tough fit. And really, just any way you draw it up, as the texter says, you're ending with weak spots in your top nine. Even if you load up the top six, you're kind of punting on any offense from the other two lines at that point. And I think that is behind a lot of what we're seeing, a lot of the resistance to making changes that we are seeing from Rick Tockett. Noah in Langley on Hoglander says, Hoglander has usually responded really, really well after getting sat for a game or two. Would it be worth it to sit him for game six and see if it fires him up for game seven? I don't think you can do that because, again, he played his strongest game of the series. Now, it's in game five. It's admittedly been a process for Nils Hoglander to kind of find his footing in this series. I think game one in particular, he looked pretty lost. But you've been seeing those signs of what you want to see from Nils Hoglander. Getting engaged physically, getting engaged after the whistle, getting in on the forecheck. You know, had the nice wraparound attempt, I think it was in game four, of that series down in Nashville. So you're seeing that development. You're seeing that positive trajectory from Nils Hoglander. I don't think you can take him out of the lineup just in the hopes that you'll kind of get jump-started version of Nils Hoglander in Game 7. I think you got to keep rolling your best lineup out there and try to end this series tomorrow night on the road in Game 6. And I think keeping Nils Hoglander, I mean, look what he did in terms of goal scoring in the regular season. That's what this team needs. They need someone who can score goals at 5-on-5. Hoglander's your best bet in the bottom six right now to be able to do that, at least in terms of your wingers. There's just not really a plausible option to take him out of the lineup and bring somebody back in instead. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. You can get your thoughts in. People are getting mad at Rick Tockett, man. Tockett's transformation from Jack Adams to Willie Desjardins is almost complete. Come on, we don't need to start throwing the Willie D comps around. Let's not go there. They're still up in the series. They're still up in the series, guys. I don't know how many times I have to keep repeating that. I'm not saying they have it in the bag, but they are still leading the series 3-2 right now. By the way, and we'll do the Abbey report kind of impromptu here, but this text comes in about Vasily Podkolzin. How did Pods do last night? If the Canucks lose game six and Pods had a dominant performance, they could bring him in. So we'll do the Abbey Farm Report here. The Abbey Farm Report, a presentation of David L. Young of Dexter Realty. And the Abbotsford Canucks, they had a playoff game last night. They opened their second round series against the Ontario Reign, the farm team of the LA Kings. First two games, it's a best of five series. So first two games are down in Ontario, California. They lose 3-1 last night on the road, dropping the first of that best of five series. Max Sasson had the lone goal for the Canucks, unassisted goal for Max Sasson. So nice to see him continuing his strong play from the regular season into the playoffs. Now, to the question of Vasily Podkolzin, he was on the ice for the goal, so he finishes as a plus one in a 3-1 loss, didn't pick up a point, had four shots on the night, that led the way. I didn't watch the game, so I can't really comment on how dominant of a performance it was, what it looked like on a shift-to-shift basis. You like to see him involved in terms of getting those shots on goal. You like to see that he's on the ice for the only goal that they scored, not on for any of the goals against. That's all nice. But I don't think they're all of a sudden going to look at Vasily Podkolzin in fresh eyes or through new eyes as an option in this series, you know, because he got four shots on goal in an AHL playoff game. Having said that, I also don't, you know, he was reassigned to Abbotsford yesterday. I don't think that's because they're dissatisfied with Vasily Podkolzin. I mean, Rick Tocchet addressed this. They haven't played him yet, but they understand he needs to get games. Abbotsford is an option, so why not send him down there and get games? But he could absolutely still be an option at some point. There just needs to be a logical opportunity to bring him in. By the way, on Abbotsford, Game 2 is Sunday, also down in Ontario. Then the series shifts to Abbotsford for the final three games. Of course, definitely Game 3, Games 4 and 5 if necessary, but the final three will all be in Abbotsford. So at least one home playoff game for the Abbotsford Canucks this year. That one will go Wednesday, May 8th. We'll be at Abbotsford between them and the Ontario Reign in Game 3 of their series. You can get tickets at abbotsford.canucks.com if you want to secure your tickets for that one. See the Abbotsford Canucks, potentially Vasily Podkolzin, in a playoff game in Abbotsford this year. The Abbey Farm Report brought to you by David L. Young of Dexter Realty. Here, there, everywhere. Visit homes by davidlyoung.com. Jeff and Langley texts in, Jamie, I was a big fan of Veronik, still am, but he's seemingly making bad reads and pinches and getting caught in the neutral zone during this series. He's kind of also struggled down the stretch a bit towards the end of this season. I just don't see this guy as a fit for anything north of $6 million on this blue line, especially as he played a lot of his minutes paired with a Norris winner. The playoffs have also shown us how valuable Myers and Zadorov are as pending UFAs. That's from Jeff in Langley, and the Hronik conversation is really, really fascinating. And, you know, Drance and I spent a lot of time this year kind of setting up how complicated the negotiations between the Canucks and Filip Hronik would be, especially when he was lighting the league on fire in terms of points production early in the season. It looked like he might have, you know, a 60-point season under his belt. He ends at 48 in the regular season, which, you know, helps the Canucks, but it's still a really strong number for a right shot defenseman in the NHL to have a 48-point season. So it doesn't make it a simple negotiation, even if it, you know, slightly reduces his leverage from where it looked like it was going to be earlier in the season. You know, I don't think you look at five games in the playoffs and maybe some bad reads or a lack of production, a lack of offensive production, all of a sudden completely change your tune on a player. I think you can get into some, you can make some really big mistakes overrating a 5-6 game sample in the playoffs, whether it's positively or negatively, right? Whether you look at a guy who has an incredible 6 games and think, oh man, we need that in the lineup, or whether you look at a guy who had a poor 6 games and completely decide that they're, you know, surplus, you don't actually need them on the team. I think either one is a very, very dicey way to make decisions. So for me, it's not so much about Hronik producing down the stretch, anything like that. It's the fact that they haven't really relied on him at any point in this series. He hasn't been a key defenseman for them. And if you're going to pay a guy, you know, I think the report was that they offered him 8 years at $6.5 million sometime in March. That was rejected. So if you're going to pay a guy, you know, $7 million over 8 years, I think they need to be somebody that you can put in key spots in a playoff series. Again, it's not just about rating his playoff impact this year. To me, it's more about how does he fit on a winning team? How does the coaching staff see him? How does the coaching staff want to use him? And I think it's very telling that, you know, the big four on the back end, as Rick Tocchet likes to call them, Zadorov, Myers, Cole, Soucy, have seen their minutes go up. Hronik's minutes have been reduced. Now, I know Quinn Hughes's have as well, but again, as I said to Sat, ideally you'd have a part, if you're going to pay somebody else on the blue line, you know, $7 million plus, you don't want them to be solely reliant on Quinn Hughes to make an impact. You don't want it to be a situation where, well, we're dropping Quinn Hughes's minutes and that means we have to drop Filip Hronik's minutes as well. You kind of want a guy who can, okay, hey, Quinn Hughes is maybe dealing with something. We can't play him as much. Don't worry. We can still get Filip Hronik out there and make an impact. And we haven't really seen that. We haven't seen that type of usage. Hey, maybe we will as the playoffs go on and it's a completely different conversation. But that's kind of the biggest red flag that I've seen with Filip Hronek so far. Again, it's not just, oh, you know, no points, minus three, things like that. It's the fact that the coaching staff doesn't seem to really view him as a key player in this series. Lots of texts coming in here, 650, 650. And somebody put, so the person who said he's the new Willie D says, conspiracy level of stubbornness to change lines that are generating the lowest shots through five games in NHL history by Tocchet. That's why he's turning in to Willie D. He also says, here's the thing, Jamie. What's currently happening isn't working at all. How is stubbornly sticking to status quo better than trying something different? I can understand the point. I absolutely can understand the point because, again, despite the fact that they're leading 3-2, as the texter says, you know, near historic levels of low levels of shots on goal through five games for the playoffs. You know, what is it, 12 goals in five games? That's not where you want the number to be. But as much as this was for a lot of the season a really high scoring team, as Rick Dhaliwal pointed out, that declined a lot. As he pointed out in the crossover on our program yesterday, that declined a lot over the second half of the season. And I think what we're seeing, it's not so much that Rick Tocchet's lineup combinations aren't working or they're, you know, he's not finding solutions. I think we're just seeing a little bit more of this is kind of how the Canucks are built. After they made the Elias Lindholm trade, they obviously wanted him to come in, boost the offense in the top six, you know, either play as a winger himself or move one of Pettersson or Miller to the wing. That didn't work. They're pretty much locked into the three centers down the middle now. And once you do that, you're short on offensively talented wingers. And you can juggle things up as much as you want, but there's no way to create more offensively talented wingers out of thin air. You're always going to run into that deficit no matter how you change things up. And I don't think Rick Tocchet is, you know, above criticism by any stretch. Yeah, he's probably going to win the Jack Adams, but there's always things you can do differently. There's always, you know, things you can ask questions about. And look, at some point, if the Canucks are out of the playoffs, we can have those conversations. It's just really, really hard for me to look at the personnel that Rick Tocchet has available and say that, oh, it's his line combinations which are costing this team. I don't buy that. I don't buy that that's the case. We'll see, ultimately, what happens and where that conversation with Rick Tocchet goes after the playoffs are over one way or another. This one, why not put Hughes and Zadorov on the same pairing? I think they could do some damage. I think one thing is Rick Tocchet really likes having the kind of big, strong, more typical physical defenseman on pairings together because, as I said to Sat, you know, the Canucks don't have any liability defensive pairings. They're confident putting Cole and Zadorov out against anyone. They're confident putting Soucy and Myers out against anyone. They're confident putting Hughes and Hronek out against anyone. And I think Tocchet really likes having those big physical guys that he can put out together in key situations. I think that's pretty important to him. You lose a little bit of that if you go to Hughes, Zadorov. And really, look, they've played Quinn Hughes and Filip Hronek together all year. It had a ton of success, especially early in the season. Quinn Hughes has been phenomenal for the whole season, even as Filip Hronek's production dropped way off in the second half of the year. I don't think you need to switch that up. That's been such a bread and butter foundational thing for the Canucks. Switching that up when you're leading the series, I don't think that's sending that calm message that Sat and I talked about earlier that Rick Tocchet has emphasized so much this year. I think that's overthinking things a little bit right now. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This one comes in. I can't believe you guys don't get it. Little water bugs like Quinn Hughes, if they are your number one, of course they are going to be targeted. We had to watch a decade of Sedin abuse. Been trying to say for 2 years to cash in on this guy's high trade value. He could easily have brought back two top three forwards and a first rounder. You are now seeing the real Quinn Hughes. This guy's out on Quinn Hughes after five playoff games because he took some hits. Guess what? He took a bunch of hits in this series. He looked great. Fantastic in game five. You know who else has taken a ton of hits in this series? Number one defenseman, Roman Josi, who's 6'1 and over 200 pounds. Not exactly a little guy out there, in case you haven't noticed. And yeah, he's been leveled a number of times. That's part of the playoffs. Are there things that Quinn Hughes can do a little better to not put himself in the line of fire? Yeah, of course there are. He's going to learn that. He's going to improve. Does anyone think Quinn Hughes isn't capable of slightly tweaking his game in the playoffs to get the most out of what he's capable of doing? Have you been watching his career? Have you seen how he's just steadily improved time after time? Because it's been pretty impressive. So yeah, he's taken a few hits. He's also made some spectacular plays, if you haven't already forgotten. So if this is the Quinn Hughes package in the playoffs, gets hit sometimes, but also makes incredible superstar game-breaking plays to help you tie a game late and steal a win on the road, I will take that trade. Quite easily, I will take that trade. Quite happily, I will take that trade. And again, to think that the first five games, which admittedly have not been quite up to his standard, Quinn Hughes, and his standard is extraordinarily high. Let's not forget that. They haven't been quite up to his standard, but again, all Quinn Hughes has ever done in his NHL career is improved incredibly rapidly, learned at such a high rate, and he's going to do that. He's probably going to do that in this series. That's how quickly he does it. I think we've already seen it. Played probably his worst game of the series in Game 4, then his best in Game 5. I will never bet against Quinn Hughes' ability to maximize his talent, to figure out how to put himself in a situation to be successful. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Dranser will join the show in the next segment. We'll get Brendan Batchelor on the line here as well. Lots of people are fired up about that Quinn Hughes text, as was I. This one, Quinn Hughes is the best player on the team. This guy is an idiot. Another one, that's bait, boys. We won't stand for Quinn Hughes slander. I agree. Come on. We do not have to do this in a series that the Canucks are winning, guys. I get the focus on Pettersson. That's fair. He's got to be way better. We absolutely do not have to start is Quinn Hughes a playoff performer discourse. Come on. Let's have some composure here. By the way, somebody texts in, have those idiots in the NHL given us a time for tomorrow's game yet? Yes, they have. 4:00 Pacific time, puck drop in Nashville for Game 6. All right, thanks for all the texts. Really appreciate it. Always fun. Somebody says, Jamie, I have to commend your level of patience for these interesting takes. That's Jay from Mount Pleasant. I'll be honest. My favorite, I think I've said this before, my favorite part of the job is reading your guys' texts. I love seeing what you're thinking, even when I vehemently disagree with it, as I did with that last Quinn Hughes one. I love being part of a conversation. So get those texts in, even if they're absolutely wild takes. Drancer will join the show, I think. We'll see. I realized as I said that I don't have confirmation. But sometime soon, Drancer will join the show, and Batch definitely will join the show next here on Canucks Talk. On Sportsnet 650. But before we go to break, I also wanted to say that Canucks playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Sky Avenue Kitchen and Lounge. Discover Surrey's newest luxury dining experience. Experience the richness of Canadian cuisine prepared by a Michelin-recommended chef. Reserve your table today at skyavenue.com.